Welcome to Focus on the Community, produced by the DLC Media News Center. I'm Dave Crooks. Today, my special guest is Democratic State Representative Tanya Paff of Terre Haute. Tanya was first elected in November 2018, replacing longtime legislator Clyde Kersey. Representative Paff represents District 43, which includes most of Vigo County. She serves as the ranking minority member on the Elections and Apportionment Committee, as well as a member of the Budget Writing Ways and Means Committee and the Education Committee. Tanya is a math teacher at Terre Haute North High School. She and her husband, Chris, have four children. She's the daughter of Fred and Nancy Nation. On this weekend's program, we'll discuss the short session of the Indiana General Assembly, which kicked off Tuesday this week, and what Hoosiers can expect from lawmakers in 2022. Representative, welcome to Focus on the Community.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
We had John Ford on last week, so I thought I would give a House member, especially from the minority party, a chance to have some airtime to talk about some of the issues that we covered last week. First of all, as you know, Indiana is a citizen legislature, which means it's not designed to be a full-time job. Having served 12 years myself, though, it feels like it can be a full-time job, especially when you're in session. You've only been a state legislator for a little over 3 years. Tell us what it's like to be a member of the General Assembly, from the good, the bad, and the ugly.
So, there's two parts to my job, right? So first there are the constituents. So it's been very interesting and fascinating to learn all the concerns of what people are passionate about, right? So there's so many different aspects of Indiana, and especially with COVID, there's been so many problems that I've really enjoyed working with constituents and helping them navigate the state policies. As far as the General Assembly, that is just an amazing process. So the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, it's an honor to represent the people, which I think is so important. You know, the west side of the state is completely different than downtown Indianapolis, completely different than Lake County. So we have different issues. So I enjoy going over there and explaining to people, hey, this is what it's like over here in Terre Haute, West Terre Haute, Seeleyville. And as far as an educator, so I am the only working teacher out of 150. And, you know, we spend half of our budget.
You're the only teacher left
Yes.
in the General Assembly?
Now, we have retired teachers,
Sure.
don't get me wrong.
Okay.
But as far as boots on the ground in the classroom, it's just me out of 150 of us.
Wow.
Senate and House representatives. And so I think it's so important to have that voice because, you know, I taught Monday this week, and then we started session Tuesday. So I'm very familiar with what's going on in the classroom.
Sure.
So the good, the bad, and the ugly, I think I bring a unique perspective to the General Assembly. The bad is, you know, we're not as bad as Washington, D.C., but there is still a lot of partisan politics going on. I think the longer I'm there, the better it gets in that, you know, I get to know more people. So representatives and senators, they're just people, right? So the more relationships you build, I think the better my job and the better bills can come out from that.
I was amazed when I served. I was like in for 3 or 4 terms, and all of a sudden I had people saying, well, how was Washington, D.C. this week? And I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm a state representative, not a federal representative. I mean, people get confused, and they don't always know what's the difference, of course. But
absolutely. I still get asked that in Kroger.
Sure. I bet you do. You mentioned like the difference when it comes to the ugly, or at least working at the General Assembly. When I served, we had a much more even composition of members from both parties. Now you've got this super majority. I mean, when we would make the Republicans mad, they would just walk off the floor and go to caucus and shut the whole program down. You guys now, if you get mad because they've got a super majority, you can walk off the floor and they can still conduct business, which that's got to be just stressful at times.
It's a little difficult because, you know, we have good ideas too, right?
Right.
So let's see, what 26% of the General Assembly is Democrat. Now, we just went through a census, and really about 44% of Indiana is Democrat. So just if you look at those numbers, we're not getting equal representation. So when we have amendments, we have bills, and the supermajority doesn't want to hear them, they just don't hear them. And I don't think that's the purpose of the General Assembly. You know, you need both sides to make the best bill and best legislation possible for all Hoosiers. So yes, it does get very frustrating.
My first session, we were split 50-50. Second time that had happened in the state's history. So you always had to reach across the aisle and figure out how do we get together and pass something. So it can kind of force us to work together. But now that you've got this lopsided difference right now, it's like steamroll through whatever the majority wants. So that's right. Different.
And there's only a few bills that come up every session that may be a bit contentious that they need us. It's like, hey, we're having trouble passing this. And then there's all kinds of, what do we call them, kumbaya moments where sure. people come over and like, hey, would you be willing to support that? And to me, when that happens, that's what it should be like.
Well, when I served, 85% of the bills were never that controversial. Right. You'd see 90 votes on the board right. consistently
it's,
or more.
It's still the same. Okay. I mean, I would say probably 90% are really nonpartisan bills. They're just things, you know, that we're trying to do for the good of all the people.
So, but even if we'd have drag out fights about certain issues, education or other issues, we'd still get together after session and go have a drink and get to know each other. I think that's becoming more challenging these days just with the partisanship that we're seeing nationally. It kind of trickles down to the state and local levels, I'm afraid.
And let's add COVID to that.
Absolutely.
So last session, it was you show up, you do your job, you leave. So there's no any kind of social events, any kind of opportunity to get to know anybody really, because if you think about a year ago, we were a lot more scared than we are now.
Sure.
This session, there's more opportunities, but things have still changed. We don't have, for example, resolutions on the floor. So let's say Terre Haute North wrestling team wins state. Well, in the past, we would bring them to the floor, do a resolution, you know, and they got to see the people's house, right?
Right.
Well, now the resolutions are done on the fourth floor. And so it would be just the representative from that community presenting the resolution.
Ah, so they're not recognized on the full house anymore.
Not on the house. I'm told in the Senate they'll still do them, but not on the house side. So, I mean, things have changed. So there's just not that energy that there was when I started 3 years ago, of course, before COVID.
You mentioned, or at least I mentioned when we started the program, you're on the Elections and Apportionment Committee, which was very important last year because every 10 years you got to take the census data and create new maps. I mean, you're in the minority, of course, so you don't have much control over what the majority wants to do with those maps. What happened to your district? What kind of changes did you see in your district?
So my district really didn't change much at all. Of course, we lost population in Vigo County, so it expanded a bit, but I still just cover Terre Haute. West Terre Haute and Sealyville. It was interesting, as ranking minority member of elections, there were 9 state meetings all over the state. We tried to hit every area, and Senator Ford ran one, and Tim Wesko, the House guy, ran the other, and we all split up. So I went to 5 different meetings across the state just to hear people give us an opportunity how they wanted the maps drawn. And, you know, overwhelmingly, everyone said we would like more competitive districts. We don't like to go, you know, to vote and there's just a Republican on the ticket or just a Democrat. We want competition, and that simply didn't happen.
But no, it's unfortunate, but that's just the old gerrymandering is real, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So I wish we could change it, but I just don't see the majority giving up that advantage right now.
No, but I do think I think it's so important to have representation. So, you know, whatever the maps look like, I still think it's so important for people to run and to get their ideas out, you know, to do the best we can to get the most people involved in state policy helps out everyone.
Yeah, I applaud you and others that want to step up and serve, but it seems to me with what we've witnessed over the last 5 years nationally, it's not a great time to be in public service. I mean, it's just, I'd be worried about my safety at times right now compared to when I served, if I served today.
Well, you know, as a high school math teacher, I thought I'd heard all names people could possibly call me until I got into politics. So I will say, you know, it is not easy sometimes. People don't always agree with how I'm representing, and I've been called a lot of names, but, you know.
That's unfortunate. I wish things were much more civil, but they're not. So, well, let's move on to some issues. I read in today's, actually Friday's Tribune Star, the front page, the headline, "A bill to restrict vaccine mandates heads to the House." It sounds like the Republican majority is fast-tracking legislation which will block any mandates that, like the president recently had put out, trying to make sure that employers would force vaccinations if they had 100 or more employees. the state wants to block that, it sounds like, with the current bill that's moving. Is that a good idea, bad idea? Where do you stand on that?
Well, from my understanding, we're at the top numbers now. We have more COVID cases than we had even a year ago. The healthcare system is really struggling. Those healthcare workers are doing an amazing job. It's kind of like a race, right? You think you're only going to run 26 miles, and then they move the finish line. And that's what's been happening with COVID and the healthcare system. So to me, the more people that get vaccinated, the better, because the beds are getting, you know, the beds are getting used up by, let's just say, COVID. And then there's all kinds of other problems. So we need as few as people as possible in the hospital. But, you know, let's talk about economics. You know, we want a strong economy, and it's really hard to produce whatever you're producing when your workforce, half your workforce is home or they're quarantined because of COVID. And then it's hard to teach students who are quarantined at home, because then their parents can't go to work. And then they're falling behind because, you know, I'm teaching class and, you know, five of them are in quarantine. And so it's just creating so many problems. You know, we all thought we'd be through this by now, right? And we're not. So anything we can do to make people healthier and safer, I'm all for.
So by your answer, I assume you're vaccinated.
Absolutely, and boosted, and as my whole family.
Okay, good for you. I am too, and I believe in the science, and I just, I'm amazed that I've even got a couple of employees that still won't take the vaccine, and I just scratch my head, and one's out of work this week because of it. So, and she's not vaccinated.
Well, and you know, it's not that the vaccine is the cure-all, but all the science says, even if you do get it, you're going to have, you know, just much milder symptoms. And I don't want to be really sick.
Yeah, me too.
I don't. I just don't.
I don't want to be on a ventilator.
No, I don't either.
You mentioned that we're a least safe place to be. And I'm just going to mention that article, a recent story that the Indianapolis Star published, which came from a source called Wallet Hub, claims Indiana is the least safest place in America when it comes to the risk of catching COVID. We're 51st, or even behind the District of Columbia. The article mentions low vaccination rates, which is barely at 50%, high death rates, hospitalizations, transmission rates, and positive testing rates. So do you think that report is accurate, and should lawmakers do more to keep us from being the riskiest place in America when it comes to COVID?
I wish we could, but I don't think we will.
And under the current leadership, you don't see that happening,
no,
especially with the bill we just talked about. They're
right.
They're going the opposite direction.
They're going the opposite direction. And, you know, if we stop and think for a little bit about national security, so let's talk about the Indiana Guard for a second. We have a great Indiana Guard system. Let's say something happens where we get threatened and half of our guard is out because of COVID. Again, we don't want to be vulnerable in any way. So the more people get vaccinated, the more people do what we need to do for the betterment of everyone is what I'm for.
Yeah, quit reading the wild social media posts that there's something wrong with the vaccine, but oh well, you can only do so much. When I served, I learned very quickly the General Assembly has a lot of power. As a matter of fact, when you guys are in session, 150 of you have more authority than the governor. But when you're not in session, the governor has much broader executive authority. Where do you stand on the push right now to weaken the executive decision-making by the governor when you're not in session? Because he's made some decisions, especially when it came to COVID, that seemed to anger some of the majority party members.
Well, let me start by saying I think Governor Holcomb did a great job, and Dr. Christina Boggs, managing this crazy time for the past year and a half where information changed daily, right? If we go back to when we were in lockdown to where we are now, things just changed so quickly. So we're only in session for either 2.5 months or 4 months. So when we're out of session, okay, I have a family of six and we can't even decide where to go to dinner. So I can't imagine having to have a decision that has to do with public safety, right? And it's very time sensitive trying to call all 150 of us back in to come to some kind of agreement. So there were three veto overrides, and you know, I was on the governor's side every single time. So unless we become a full-time legislative body, to me, I'm okay with the governor having the powers that he has.
And this is for future governors, whether
yes.
they're Republican or Democrat.
Yes.
I mean, I'm with you. I think the executive has to have some authority to make decisions when you guys are not in town. I get it. So we've got a record surplus, which the majority party and probably even members of the minority party are pretty happy about. We've always been pretty financially responsible, I think, in the Hoosier state. But there is a proposal that the governor is leading to send back a rebate or giving a credit perhaps of $125 per Hoosier. Is this a good idea, or would you like to see the surplus used in other ways?
I would like to see it used in other ways. Look, I'm really glad that we have our rainy day fund, and that's very fiscally responsible. And then we went over it. So let's talk about things like, of course, public education, which educates 90% of our students in Indiana. You know, we have a teacher shortage. And when I say teachers, I mean bus drivers, cafeteria workers, counselors. We have a shortage. And, you know, education is the great equalizer. So we ought to be doing whatever we can to provide funding to get kids the best education as possible. So instead of $125 back, I would like investments more. You know, let's figure out how to get more teachers in the classroom. Also, I drive I-70 every day. I would love it to be a three-lane from Terre Haute to Indianapolis. Talk about our infrastructure of Indiana. We have roads, bridges. I mean, all this stuff takes so much money. And again, I don't want $125. I want the state of Indiana to be a better place to live, work, and play. And so the more we invest in health care, child care, public education, infrastructure, it helps everyone out. So
I quit driving I-70. I take US 40 just because it just seems so unsafe with all the wrecks that have happened.
It's a lot more mellow, too.
It is. I enjoy the slower pace, perhaps. But I see where you're headed with that. And what people don't understand, if you made $50,000 a year and you decided to put maybe 5% away, okay, you can do the quick math on that. Okay, I've got $2,500 I saved for this year. You got a $32 billion budget. All right, we got a couple of billion dollars stashed away. It's almost the equivalent of the average person saving 5 to 10% each year. It's not a big amount when you look at it that way. And right. Since we are reliant on both income and sales taxes be Indiana's driver of income, those rainy days could creep up on us again, and then we've blown the surplus. So I'm not so sure that even spending it all is a great idea either, just because you do need a piggy bank. But sending it back makes me think, okay, it's an election year, so it's kind of a gimmick. I mean, our side did that years ago, too, with the $100 rebate that didn't make it. But I keep also hearing rumors, and I don't want to get too drifted from our actual discussion on policy, but it makes me feel like Eric Holcomb is running for U.S. Senate, and we'll find out for sure if that's happening. But that's what my intel tells me, that Mike Braun might run for governor, and Holcomb may be doing this as a great little marketing program when he decides to announce. But we'll find out if that speculation is true later. But back to issues. You should have a really interesting opinion on this, because I asked the same question to Senator Ford last week. If you run for school board in Indiana, it's nonpartisan. You don't have to declare if you're a Democrat or Republican. The majority party wants to change that to where you have to proclaim your party alliance. Good idea, bad idea?
Bad idea. So, you know, there are no Democrat or Republican schools. I go in and I teach whoever's in front of me. So there's no reason to put more politics on school boards. So there's been lots of arguments back and forth of why, you know, whoever declares and is on the school board, in a couple of Google clicks, you can figure out if they're a Democrat or Republican if you wish. So to me, what happens in politics nationally and statewide is once you put that D or R behind your name, it just becomes a money game. So the state party, federal, you experience all this.
Sure.
The money follows the candidate. And so why would we want that?
It sounds like they want complete domination right now, the majority party.
It does sound that way. But to me, there doesn't need to be more politics on school boards. They've had to deal with it enough. I mean, you don't need to be a Democrat or Republican sitting up there. You should just be working collectively, you know, as a board, with your schools, with your parents. And, you know, again, it's all about education. We don't need to make it political.
And it sounds like there's some bills floating around this session where they really want to micromanage what school boards do. I mean, they're taking the Virginia lead on critical race theory and things like that, and trying to like show what you can and can't teach. I mean, have you seen many of these proposals yet? And do you
I have. We're listening to one in Education Monday at 8:30 in the morning. So we don't teach that stuff. You know, most teachers that I know, we're just trying to get them to pick up a pencil and learn some algebra or some geometry or some English. We don't get political in the classroom. You know, the social studies teachers are teaching history. All the curriculum, especially in Vigo County, I can talk about Vigo County, it's on the website. So any parent can go find out what your teacher's teaching, look at the textbook. It's already there. So to me, this is a little overreach. You know, if you're a parent and you're upset with what your kid, what your teacher said, or what you're learning in class, the first place you go to is the teacher. If you're not satisfied, you go to the principal. If you're not satisfied, you keep going. It's called the chain of command, right?
Right.
That's how it should be handled.
So you're in Terre Haute North, they're not teaching CRT. Is that a fair statement?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I've not heard one student complain about it or one teacher talking about it.
Yep, I understand. But they might have seen it on Facebook, so I guess that means it's real. I don't know. So anyway, here's an idea that Indiana seems to be slow to embrace, but at least there's bills being filed, and apparently a bill may move this session to at least debate it. Will Indiana join other states in legalizing either medical or recreational cannabis?
You know, I'd certainly like them to. I think it's hard to explain to anybody how you can buy marijuana in Ohio and drive to Illinois and get put in jail when you get pulled over in Indiana. The fact that we have Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, that is legalizing, that kind of sets us out anyway. But more importantly, I'm a huge fan of medical marijuana, and I think Indiana is ready for that. You know, we have a lot of veterans that are suffering. We have a lot of cancer, epilepsy. You know, marijuana will help these people. So that's the very least we could do. But I also understand that the supermajority and governor have come out against it. They say they won't pass it until it's federally mandated. So I don't see it going anywhere this session.
We've only got a couple of minutes left. Can you give us a quick highlight of what bills you filed this session?
Well, you know, I'm always working on education election bills. But the one that I'm most excited about, passionate about, is called Project Lifesaver. So let's say you have a child with autism or a parent with dementia. You can buy a bracelet and... if the kid wonders or the parent wonders, which has happened to friends of mine, in Vigo County, we have a transmitter that you just call the Vigo County Sheriff's Department, and as long as they're wearing the bracelet, they can find where that child or parent is. Well, the problem is a constituent approached me, their child got out, walked across to Clay County where they don't have a transmitter, or it just wasn't covered. And kids and people wandering around don't understand that there's a county line, right? It's invisible. So my bill is to make sure that all of Indiana is covered. So I'm currently working with the chair of the committee to try to get it where all of Indiana is covered.
Okay, good idea.
Yeah.
I'll give you a quick minute for politics. The tough part about being a state representative, it's a two-year term, and you're up for re-election this year. I take it you're running again?
Yes, I am. Yeah. You know, I just, I'm finally getting there, right? So I've been there 3 years. It takes a little while to figure out this system and figure out all the nuts and bolts and how everything works. And, you know, I love my community. So I think I can only continue to do more for my community if I'm elected.
Okay. And then bottom line, why should people reelect you?
Well, most importantly, I'm a huge advocate of Vigo County. So the more that we talk about, so when I first got there, you know, a lot of bills are centered around, as you probably remember, Lake County and Marion County. Well, Vigo needs to be in those conversations too. The more economic driver we can set to this side, better high paying jobs. You know, we're decreasing population. I want to see our population increase. So I'm just a huge advocate. And also representation is important. Right now, only 24% are women over in the General Assembly. And again, we make up a good 50% of Indiana's population. And I just think it's important to have Democrats and women, again, representation, so the better legislation that can come out to affect everyone.
Okay. And then if people need to get a hold of you, what's the best way to reach you?
The best way to reach me is my email, which I can rattle off, but nobody ever remembers.
Right.
You just Google Tonya, T-O-N-Y-A, PAFF, P-F-A-F-F, and Indiana General Assembly comes up, and you can just email my office anytime.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the program, and we hope it's a very successful session for you.
Well, it was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
This has been Focus on the Community for the weekend of January 9th, 2022, produced by the DLC Media News Center. For a download of this show and other past programs, visit any of our radio station websites. I'm Dave Crooks, and thanks for listening.